Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting.
Hi.
That was I just realized that was a squeaky hello, everybody. I have a little bit of a cold, so I apologize.
That was a bit of a nasally high from my, I don't know what I have. It's a little bit beyond the cold.
Yeah, I don't have what you have, but it's
I know
like
what it's
mine,
not.
Mine is like right here. I'm gesturing to my chest. It's like right in my chest. It's really great. So I'm sorry in advance if I sound like I'm a little ill, but we are back, and Dave, we have a guest with us again this week.
We do, Eric. Put on your finest plaid and don't bury the lead.
I might even throw some suspenders on too while we're at it. Maybe a checkered tie. I'm gonna go full out. Full out. So whether you consider yourself to be, you know, a mainstream No Doubt fan, you really like that one cover of Take On Me, or you find yourself toe-tapping to the intro of America's Funniest Home Videos, guess what? You like ska, too. Dave and I are no strangers to the genre, and I was even a drummer in a ska band for about a year or so. And today's guest calls a wonderfully appropriate crossroads for this show home. Max Beckman is a collector, comic book enthusiast, and store owner, and as guitarist and vocalist of Orange County's Half Past Two, he's gigged with ska and punk royalty, such as Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, The Aquabats, and The English Beat. Max, welcome to Adventures in Collecting.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure is all ours.
Yeah, thanks for coming aboard.
I think you have now the honor of being the first musician on the show. We've had pro wrestler. We've had, of course, toy marketers. We've had toy designers. But I don't think
we've had people who've dabbled, but not like calling musician like.
Yeah, you are definitely the first like professional musician that we've had on the show. So this is a new milestone for us. This is a new milestone for us. So we're really excited to have you. As this is a show about, you know, toy collecting. First question that we ask all of our guests, what are you currently collecting and what are some of your recent pickups?
All right. So I will keep it to current, just current. So this doesn't take 2 hours or more. So currently I would say my main thing is always Marvel Legends. Although I have many main things, so that's not really fair. Marvel Legends, Star Wars Black Series, Power Rangers Lightning Collection, such as it, if that can be called a current line since it's on hiatus.
Yeah,
rip. But also other Power Rangers, like I collect all the Super 7 Ultimates and other various Super Sentai things, so Power Rangers in general, TMNT in general. I do not all the cartoon NECAs, but a lot of them. I'm not a completionist on really many of the sublines, but I collect a lot of the NECA Turtles and the Turtles Ultimates and various other Turtles stuff. And my other Transformers Masterpiece. But Masterpiece scale, I don't have a ton of official Masterpiece. I mainly get third-party stuff because it's just a lot better. And they make a lot of things that Sakara and Hasbro haven't even gotten to. I collect all the Beast Wars. There's been a ton of third-party like Beast Wars Masterpiece scale stuff too. And my newest thing is Japanese Sufubi Godzilla, other Sufubi too, to an extent, just, you know, like one-off original characters, but mainly Godzilla and other Toho monsters. Hedorah is my favorite Godzilla monster, villain, enemy, however you want to say it. So I was just getting like a lot of Hedorah, but now I've kind of expanded and have a lot of Hedorah and a lot of Godzilla and try to get all the different characters represented at least a little bit. I think that's what I'm getting currently. I think that is all my current like main collections.
And that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We were talking about it before we started recording, but those Sufubi kaijus, they're gorgeous, like all those different colorways and like the metallic like glitter variants and stuff. There's so many cool colorways of those.
That's what really kind of drew me into it, because I've always been like a collector of realistic looking things or on model looking things, and just going getting, you know, these characters, kaiju in just crazy colors was just really appealing. And these things that don't fit in with the, you know, 1/12 scale collection that I vaguely stick to was appealing after so many years. Because my previous main collection was 3 3/4 inch Star Wars that I did from Power of the Force 2, and I fell off about 2010. I just got totally burnt out. I still have most of them. Trying to figure out what I'm doing with them, and I'll still buy some of the like I've done the Haslabs for Black Series, because I like to have the big chips, but mainly I've been 1/12 scale since I got really back into action figure collecting in 2016, and I've been pretty much 1/12 scale since then. I was pretty hardcore Mythic Legions until, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago, and I still love them, but it was kind of one of those things where something had to give. So I've started to sell that collection off. I probably had one of the biggest Mythic Legions collections, honestly, in the world, but they're going away, unfortunately. But
Well, if there was one to part with, that one was financially probably the best one to part with, because some of those figures I know were, you know, you probably made your money back and some.
Mythic Legions,
lucrative, yeah.
It's almost impossible to lose money on Mythic Legions if you bought them, you know, when they were first available as a pre-order direct from Four Horsemen. So yeah, that was one of the reasons I decided to let go of that collection. But ultimately, what it came down to was something had to give somewhere, and the nostalgia won out over just loving those figures, you know. And so me just having my Marvel characters, my Star Wars, my Turtles, my Power Rangers, Super Sentai, like that just has more of a place in my heart, even though I love the Mythic Legions and they're so cool and they're amazing figures and they're like works of art. They're awesome and I love them, but I had to draw a line somewhere.
Yeah, totally get it. I'm this is kind of the year for me where I'm trying to determine some more strict guardrails, because things have gotten a little out of hand.
So I know the feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I got really, really out of hand like during pandemic, because I was just like working all the time and just at home. Well, not home, in my warehouse too, and just, you know, we weren't going anywhere. And so I just was like, there's more money because we're not doing anything. And now I'm like, oh boy. Because I was doing like G.I. Joe Classified, and I was doing all kinds of like, just, oh, that looks cool. Like I was doing Thundercats Ultimates, even though I never watched Thundercats as a kid. I was like, oh, Ultimates, I'll just get all the Ultimates. But then it's like, what am I doing? So these are cool. I should have this because it will fit in this collection of 112 figures, but there's too much stuff. So
it is a line we all get to for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So getting into the band, Half Past Two was formed in 2006. Nearly 20 years ago, at the height of kind of that era of kind of pop punk and ska being a big thing. How did the band initially come together?
Well, I mean, ska was not popular when we started this band, and it's still not popular, but it's been making inroads lately. I went to high school at Los Alamitos High School, which is kind of a epicenter for Orange County ska in the 90s. That's where Real Big Fish was formed. That's where Monique Powell from Save Ferris went to school. RX Bandits came from that school. So it was kind of always around. When I was a kid, my best friend's older sister had a boyfriend who was one of the original saxophone players for the RX Bandits, who were known as the Pharmaceutical Bandits at the time. So I saw them in the gym at Los Alamitos High School when I was still in elementary school or middle school. And that was really cool. Then I kind of forgot about it but I never really got super into ska until I was in marching band in high school and someone formed a ska band. I was like, oh yeah, ska, I've heard of this. And then I just was like super, that was it. It was over from that point. I learned guitar so I could play ska. I never wanted to do anything else. When I was a senior in high school, I formed a cover band called King Otter Pop and the Slush Tones. And we played a talent show. We did that for a few years because we were marching. All the members were from marching band. So we had like younger members. So we were able to do it for a few years in a row. And then in the summer of 2006, everyone had graduated and we kind of were just like, why don't we try being a band for real? And then we made the transition to Half Past Two. And it hasn't, we were really active from 2006 to 2009. And then, you know how bands go, there's a lot of drama. So there was a break where I was not in the band for 5 years, even though I was the one that started it. But we don't need to get into that. And then the last 10 years have been like super, like we've been super, super active and just kind of going with it since then.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I laughed when you said ska, ska wasn't popular when you formed the band and it's like, finding those inroads now. And I know like there's a lot of YouTube creators out there like Ska2 Network, that have kind of repopularized the like ska cover scene, right? Or helped repopularize it. But like it's one of those things where at least here in New Jersey, being in and out of bands since I was 15, there was always like every town had like their ska band. There was that like one ska band and they were like so popular. They were always like the most musically talented because of course, like, all the horn players and everybody, like they're the professionally trained musicians that like,
yeah. And I mean, we were the state that together. Had like Catch 22 and Streetlight.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, it's just it's funny because like I always and Dave too. I mean, we always loved the genre, So whether it was the Boss Tones, whether it was like honestly one of my fondest memories of going to like a concert when I was younger was the Skank Across America tour, where it was Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake co-headlining like a big outdoor.
Oh yeah, we were at Starland.
Yeah, it was the best.
Streetlight was on that too.
Yeah. It was so much
Suburban
fun.
Suburban Legends, Patent Pending. Yeah,
that's right. Oh, Patent Pending.
Yeah, Starland Ballroom is always one of those venues I've always seen like flyers for forever, but I've never been there or anything. Yeah, obviously. I've never been in Jersey before, so.
Well, you're coming to New York soon, right? Well,
I am, and we're staying in New Jersey, so I will finally be going to New Jersey.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, that you kind of got your, cut your teeth on, you know, the doing covers, and that's, you know, the cover scene has always been something that's been very closely associated with ska. You know, and you guys have done some really interesting covers past couple years, from Ludo's criminally underrated Love Me Dead, Dance Magic Dance from Labyrinth, which we are both tremendously fond of. And most recently, actually the first song I ever heard from you guys was your cover of Three Small Words from Josie and the Pussycats.
Yep.
How do you go about picking these songs, and what's the process to put kind of the Half Past Two spin on them?
Well, it usually just starts with something like, wouldn't it be funny if we did this? and you know, there is a strategy to it as well, because, you know, we don't want to be known as a cover band, but we have done a lot of covers, and part of it is it's just really fun. Another part is strategically, you're able to potentially find a new audience. Not all those people are going to come over and listen to our originals, but at least there's some conversion if you know, someone hears our cover. Because like Three Small Words, we actually released that in 2018, I think. And that is, for a long time, that was our most popular song on streaming by far. And so it's done a lot for us. I really like doing covers because it's easier than, not because, but it is easier than writing a song from scratch. And it's a fun challenge to take someone else's song and put it in our style. It's really enjoyable. I like rearranging songs, and I like taking all the different parts and trying to figure out how to like translate that using the instruments that we have. Like we did this in the same time we released Three Small Words. We also did, it wasn't released the same day, but it was the same session. We did Somebody That I Used to Know.
Oh,
by Gautier.
Cool.
And that was one that was like, wouldn't it be funny if we did this? Because that song is like such an earworm and like that gets stuck in people's head. And so that one was actually, that one sticks out as one of my most fun, taking, cause there's like a lot of different percussion instruments in there and melodies, and like taking that and translating, giving it to the horns, then putting this other part in the guitars. And so, yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. We're just not doing as much lately because we're trying to release more originals, but we did just do a cover of Capsule by Suicide Machines, but that was pretty much a straight cover. But that was also like, started out as our booking agent was, because we're doing some shows with the Suicide Machines. And our agent, who's also been just a friend for like 20 years almost, was like, I think he was joking. And he said, you guys should cover this since you guys are playing together. And we're like, okay. Like that's kind of our joke, is all someone has to say to us would be like, it would be funny if you did this, and we'll do it.
Well, I mean, it absolutely got me like hook, line, and sinker. I mean, I, you know, obviously wanted to do a little research, you know, prior to having you on the show, but listening to that cover, I literally just went down the rabbit hole and ended up listening to pretty much your entire discography on Apple Music. So, yeah, you've converted me. Your cover song converted
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I mean,
awesome.
We're both on board. That's
thank
for sure.
You.
So speaking of the road, you're headed back out on the road with some dates booked already. So, as a collector, how does touring impact your collecting habits?
I would say now it doesn't much because, you know, I don't have to tell you guys like so much is just online. Like I don't do toy hunting in person unless it's like a convention. I do look for like Sufubi and stuff, but there's not a lot of stores like that. If I was touring in what, like, the old days in like the late 2000s, I think I would be trying to go to Targets and Walmarts all the time, like, because that's what we had to do back then.
Yeah.
I always tell people when it comes up, like, I went to college at, in Irvine, UCI, and I would have like space between classes. So I would have routes that I knew how long it would take me. So it's like, okay, I have an hour and a half, so I can hit these three targets and this one Walmart, or I have 2.5 hours. Should I do my, should I write this essay, or should I go hit five targets?
Nice.
So if it was the old days, I'd probably be wanting to stop at targets all the time. But I mean, I do still always look at the toy aisle when I go to Target, but there's really not much to worry about finding in store as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, not so much, but I am trying to find some unique, like, Tsufubi toy stores or some that might have that kind of stuff where we're going now. So yeah, that's I'm hopeful for that.
You got to keep an eye out for those little, like, the little mom and pop places. And I mean,
yeah, the little,
I, yeah, for sure,
stores as opposed to the big box stores.
Yeah.
And you're headed to, and, you know, headed to New York, so there's a lot. I mean, even just a trip to Midtown Comics, you know, is mm-hmm. it's just kind of like a fun experience if you've never been there.
I haven't, but my number one my excitement about going to New York is that we're going to stay in New Jersey and that I'm going to go to Quick Stop, because that's like,
there you go.
That's like going to be a religious experience for me.
So done it, and it is. Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, that's we're also big. I think it's part of mm-hmm. like it's part of being of our generation. Like if you're yeah. not from New Jersey and a Kevin Smith fan, it's like you're suspicious. It's not a.
it's certainly it's always like, oh really, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. it sure is, like, you know, my one friend and I took the picture out front, like, all right, who's gonna be Jay? Who's gonna be so? Well, we'll take two. All right.
So yeah. does you know, speaking of being on tour, you know, does collecting ever come up with any of the other bands that you guys gig with? Like, do you ever find any kind of bonding happening over collecting?
I've only met one person ever. His name is Joseph, and he's from a band called Take Today, and he's the only person I've ever really met in another band that is also a collector. I met him when I went to Fest in Gainesville. We weren't playing that year, but we've never played Fest. But I met him. He was there, and that's like the only person I've met through music, really, that's also a toy collector. So not that much, honestly.
Yeah, we're always looking for that like weird in route with somebody that, you know, is kind of unexpectedly a collector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, always looking to see who's out there, who's ready to, like, you know, be the new face of making it even cooler to be a collector these days. Like, yeah. we just learned the other day, Batista. I can't think of his
Dave.
Dave Batista. Thank you. Is apparently he's a massive lunchbox collector.
Wow.
Like, yeah. And I mean, like. He posted
lunchboxes.
He posted a video of his lunchbox collection, and it's like, it's funny because it's like, you know, an IKEA Detolf, right? And it's a video of him putting in like one lunchbox, and he pans out, and you're like, oh, the whole Detolf's filled with lunchboxes. That's really cool. And then he keeps like moving further and further back, and you're like, oh, he's got like three or four Detolfs full of lunchboxes. Wow, that's a lot. And then he keeps going, and you're like, oh my god, the entire room is walled with Detolfs, and they're all filled, like hundred.
Right. I need to see this.
Boxes. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he talked about it like in brief in one of those old WWE documentaries about him. But like, yeah, that's a huge thing for him.
Lunchboxes. So I found the source of it. The source was he was doing the Dune 2 press tour, press junket thing. And somebody asked him like, what do you nerd out about? And he got like really like cagey for a minute and like was kind of just like didn't want to say it, and they're like, well, no, it's okay. And he was like, I really like lunchboxes and action figures. And they're like, what? And then, you know, then it cuts to the video of him with just an insane lunch, and they're awesome. It's like they're all like the vintage, like those nice colors, mm-hmm. the like full print on the front, really cool. Very
cool. Yeah, I think like the newest one was one he was on.
Like a Guardians one. Oh, or something. Wow. Yeah.
Or it might have even been a wrestling one. Like, but yeah. There was one that it was new with him on it.
But the another thing that Dave and I both collect that is a hot topic right now for you you guys are putting out a new record and yes. an end on vinyl at that. So tell us a little bit about the new record.
Yes, we have a new record coming out on April 19th. It's called Talk Is Killing Me, and it's going to come out on Bad Time Records. Bad Time Records is kind of like the epicenter of the, it's like the where ska is happening. There's other labels and stuff like Ska Punk International doing some cool things, but like Bad Time is where, it's where bands want to be, frankly, for the most part. And we've been working towards it for a long time. Like a lot of our friends are on Bad Time, and we've been friends with the owner. The owner is the lead singer of the band Kill Lincoln. And so that's something we've been working towards. So it's super exciting. We started working on the record in August of 2022, and we brought in a new co-writer producer, Reed Wolcott. She is the lead singer of the band We Are the Union, who is another one of my favorite ska bands. And so that's kind of completely transformed our process. She's like a songwriter, so we'll get in the room and we can just write a song. She pulls it out of us, and it's great because it's writing songs has been pretty tortuous over the years. Like it takes us a long time, and I always felt like I have to wait for inspiration to strike. But with her, she's just like, give me the confidence to just be like, I'll just play something random and we'll turn it into a song. And it's been very rewarding, very great experience. And yeah, the first single is called Dominoes, and it came out on February 23rd. So we got a video streaming for that, and it's available to stream everywhere. Yeah. And yeah. There will be more singles coming soon, with the full album dropping on April 9th.
Well, the first single is great. Video is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, very cool.
When you guys dropped it the other day, and yeah, that label, like you have some crazy label mates on there. You know, one of my all-time favorites, Mustard Plug.
Yeah, we've toured with Mustard Plug multiple times. The last little run we did was in the Midwest with them for their record release shows for their album on Bad Time, Where'd All My Friends Go. And so we got to do four shows with them, which was really cool. That was in Chicago, Grand Rapids, Detroit, and Cleveland, which I'd never been to any of those places before. And we really haven't played. We really didn't do much touring in the old days. So most of our touring has been more local, like California, Arizona, maybe Nevada a little bit. Now we're starting to fly out. And like you were talking about earlier, in April. So the week that the album comes out, we have four shows, Brooklyn, Washington, D.C., Bensalem, Pennsylvania, and Boston, or Somerville, but basically Boston.
Yeah.
And then by the time this airs, we'll have announced a whole grip more shows. We're going to be doing our record release shows in May in Orange County and San Francisco. And then in June, we're doing a whole Southwest tour through Arizona, Texas, Nebraska, Utah, and Colorado. And we've never done, like, that's the longest tour we've ever done. It's eight shows. The most we've done in a row before is five. And then in July, we're doing like the Pacific Northwest. And in September, we're playing Supernova Ska Fest in Virginia as well. So,
very
cool. There's other stuff too that I can't talk about yet and more to come. But yeah, we're kind of just doing it this year. We're just, you know, the album's out. It's like the biggest thing we've ever done. And we're just going to make it happen.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool.
Full send. So this is your first time working with like a producer in the studio too, right? That what you were saying?
No, actually, it's not our first time working with a producer. Our first EP and album were produced by Aaron Barrett, the lead singer of Real Big Fish, and kind of co-produced and engineered by David Irish, who is we've recorded everything with. He has a studio in Orange called Pot of Gold, and he has recorded all the Real Big Fish stuff since 2006. And he's worked with a whole bunch of other bands, and he co-produced and engineered most of the new album. We wanted to keep him part of the process. He's a very very important Half-Past 2 team member and a very close friend. So it wasn't like we're replacing. It was just like we're adding Reed in. But we had never co-written with someone before outside of the band. When we worked with Aaron and with Dave, we had the songs and we would make changes to them in the studio with them, but we'd never like from the ground up worked with a co-writer and producer. So it was a whole new experience in that regard.
And is it weird having somebody kind of like get into your head and like get into like the creative space with you like that?
No, it's awesome because it takes so much pressure off. Like it takes so much pressure off. And I also just trust her. I trust her judgment so much. So if I'm feeling self-conscious about something, wondering if it's like good or not, I know that she's not going to lie. You know, she'll be completely honest. And so it's very freeing and it's a very awesome experience. And especially to be that productive. I mean, it took a year to make the album, but that's pretty fast for us from nothing to complete. So, and there were big breaks in the middle, so, you know, whatever, it is what it is. But yeah, it's been awesome and we're continuing to work with Reed. We're already working on whatever the next project is going to be. We have some good progress already on the next thing. So
very cool. Do you normally find that it's like kind of almost like that like snowball effect or that kind of landslide effect where it's just, okay, the creativity's come and it just doesn't stop? Like,
yeah, I don't,
it just keeps rolling.
Yeah. I don't like to stop. I just like to keep it going. I want to make as much music as possible while I can. Cause you never know. You never know what's going to happen. There's been a lot of things that happened in the band in the past. I had cancer twice and almost died. So, you know, I just want to do as much as I can while we can. And that's what keeps me going.
Well, that's amazing, man. We're very excited to hear.
Sorry, I didn't want to bring it down. I'm totally fine. I've been cured for like 6 years, so I'm all clear from the cancer stuff, but it was rough for a while.
And now a word from our sponsors.
This segment is brought to you by our friends at Chubsy Wubsy Toys. A traditional mom-and-pop toy store in Little Falls, New Jersey, Chubsy Wubsy Toys brings you the best new toys from the brands you love without the hassle of pounding the pavement searching for them at larger retail stores. Visit them in person at their brand new home at 101 Newark Pompton Turnpike Suite 1 in Little Falls, New Jersey, or online at ChubsyWubsy.com. That's ChubsyWubsy.com. And tell them Adventures in Collecting sent you. Are you thirsty? Well, guess what? That's your brain telling you you're getting dehydrated. Put down that action figure and up your hydration game with show sponsor Liquid IV. Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, and it's easy to use. Rip open a pouch and pour one of their delicious flavors into a water bottle and shake it up. I'm a huge fan of the cucumber mojito and golden cherry flavors, but with more than a dozen to choose from, there's a flavor for everyone. So whether you're on a long toy hunt, spending 10 hours on your feet walking your favorite Comic-Con, trying to get to sleep, or recuperating after a gym session, stay hydrated and healthy with Liquid IV. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code AICPOD at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code AICPOD at liquidiv.com.
And now back to the show.
So outside of the band, you also run a comic shop and an online store. How did that opportunity come into your life?
So I actually just own a website, cheapgraphicnovels.com. We used to be part of a store called Pulp Fiction, which is in Long Beach, California. One of my best friends, Ryan, still owns it. I started working there. Well, I started buying my books there in 2006, I think. And in 2007, one of the employees was moving. And so I swooped in and took that job. And at the time, it was just Wednesday mornings to get the new comics and set it up. And that was it. And then my ex-boss decided to start the website, cheapgraphicnovels.com. And I kind of built most of it from the ground up. And then as things got busier, I became the first full-time employee of the shop and the website in 2010. And then everything, you know, kind of grew from there. And cut to 2019 or late 2018, my ex-boss told me and Ryan that he was going to retire basically or move on to other things. And he wanted to sell the website to me and sell the store to him. And kind of the rest is history. I officially took over as the owner in April of 2019. And that's what I've been doing since, just the website. And I'm glad that worked out because I really didn't want to do anything else.
So, and we didn't really even get into the topic of comic books, but is that something else that you're also, you know, that you collect kind of actively, or has that been more just kind of business now?
No, it's very active. I collect hardcover graphic novels for my personal collection. I have a very large, a very, very large personal collection in the room next to where I am right now. I did collect like regular, you know, just single issue comics for a long time, but I stopped in about 2011, I think is when I stopped actively buying. I still kept reading after that, but since I worked at the store, I could read whatever I wanted and without buying them. And so I decided at that point I was switching to just reading comics and then buying hardcovers of what I wanted, basically. But yeah, that's another huge collection aside from toys. That's like my main thing other than toys.
So we've got a question later on that talks about like historic graphic novels, but what are some of like the current things that would still be out there if people wanted to pick up single issues of like current series that become collected that are things that you're actively reading?
As far as like reading comics that come out on a monthly basis, I've really pared it down to just keeping up with X-Men and Spider-Man because those were the things that I started with when I started reading comics in like 24 years ago. So I keep up with those monthly for the most part. Everything else, I kind of switched to enjoying it more, also for my attention span, just like reading it when it's done. So when they do like the big omnibus collection of a whole 40 issue series, I'll just sit down and read the entire thing in a weekend or whatever. And I've found that's much more enjoyable now. But X-Men and Spider-Man are my two main, you know, my favorites as far as Marvel goes. I mean, I don't just stick to Marvel and DC. Like I have everything, all, you know, independent stuff, old stuff, EC comics, Creepy and Eerie magazine collections from the 70s. Right, like I just love comics. So I have a big library that runs the whole gamut of comics.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've kind of gone the same direction where.
Yeah. Except for Ghost Rider for me, but I've kind of gone the same route too.
I actually have totally abandoned the physical books. I read them all on my iPad now. I have, I do like the Marvel Unlimited subscription and, I do it that way now because instead of taking up, you know, space, real estate being important.
You mean you don't also want stacks of long boxes like I do in lieu of like toy space as well?
Nope, I'm already out of space, Dave. Which makes me angry. So yeah, it's nice having them all on an iPad. It's not the same, like, you know, experience wise. Yeah. But, like,
I read digitally too. Like all the single issues I read digitally. And sometimes if I need to read something, I don't have the book on hand, I'll read it digitally. But, and it's nice cause you can kind of lean back or be in bed and read it. But I do prefer, overall prefer to read physically for sure.
There's nothing like it. I mean, every now and then there'll be something that comes out, that like, I guess I shouldn't say I've completely stopped. I'm just extremely picky. So like the most recent thing I picked up was like The Last Ronin, That hardcover is first of all, it's gorgeous. The foreword in it by Robert Rodriguez is amazing. It's like when something like that comes out, you know, that's something that like that definitely needs to be on the shelf
for sure.
But switching gears back to toys, this is something that's interesting. There's a lot of toy companies out there that are making music related toys. Like, you know, you have Super 7 making ultimates and reactions of musicians. There are a lot of toy companies out there making really great figures right now. If you could be an action figure in any line, what would it be? And what would be your accessories?
I want to say Marvel Legends, but I'm not a Marvel character, so I don't think that really pertains. So I'd have to say Ultimates, because Ultimates could be anything. And also, Ultimates come with tons of accessories. Like, that's kind of part of the deal with Ultimates. So you have the most options. So obviously, I'd have to come with a guitar. And I think I should come with other action figures of all the things I collect. So like, for the Megazord Ultimates, there's like the two little, you know, or they've done it throughout the Power Rangers Ultimates. You get the little tiny ones. Yeah. To go with it. So I would need to have at least, you know, a couple, like a Spider-Man and a Wolverine and like, a Blue Ranger. Cause Blue Ranger's the best, original Blue Ranger.
Yeah, yeah.
And a Leonardo, you know, blue. I don't know what happened. Honestly, it's funny because, like, my favorite color is blue. And I really wonder if it's because of Leonardo or if that's just, like, not related at all. Because TMNT was my first love. Like, that was, I had everything to a certain point. And I ended up selling it all to pay for Star Wars stuff once Star Wars became the be all end all for me. I sold all my Power Rangers, all my Turtles, which, you know, I don't really say I regret because I wanted more Star Wars, but I really wish I had mostly the Turtles. Like the Power Ranger stuff, I don't really care about having the original Megazord. I like having the newer fancy ones, and that's cool for me. But I wish I had all the original Turtles because I don't think there's ever been another toy line like the vintage Turtle line. The creativity and just the weirdness.
Oh yeah.
Cannot be matched. And I do wish that I had those. And that's why the TMNT Ultimates it's kind of changed. And cause I don't really know why it's changed and they're maybe not doing all based on vintage toys, but at least the first several waves of TMNT Ultimates, that was like, this is my favorite line, my favorite Turtles line, because they are recreating the original figures. And you know, when I get them, I try to like make them in the same pose that the original ones were stuck in, you know. So anyway, that was a total tangent. I should come with a Spider-Man, Wolverine, a Blue Ranger, a Leonardo, and a Luke Skywalker from Return of the Jedi.
Luke Skywalker? Like, should it be like like Power of the Force, like buff?
No, POTF2, no. a vintage collection. Or Black Series, whatever. I guess Black Series. And I think that covers all the main food groups.
and what kind of guitar? Would it be a Telecaster?
No, I don't play a Tele anymore. My main guitar is a Reverend, which is a newer brand, and a lot of ska artists play a Reverend. But I also play a Gordon Smith, which is a British company that I got because Aaron Barrett used the same guitar. And I use Aaron's Gordon Smith in the studio sometimes because that's where it lives. And then I decided to get my own. And it is blue. So probably that one, because, you know, to keep the blue theme going.
Very on brand.
Yeah, for sure.
I know exactly which guitar you're talking about. I can picture it. If it's the Real Big Fish one that I'm thinking.
His is orange and red sunburst.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's the one. That's
the
guy. Yeah. Oh, such a cool guitar. That's a great choice. Super 7's a solid choice because, like you said, You get all those accessories. That's good.
So I feel like we briefly touched upon it, but it's something that we all love. Like, is there also a record collection to go with, like, kind of the ska history and influence for you?
I have a pretty modest record collection, honestly. I only started collecting them a couple years ago, and I don't really collect them per se because I didn't want to start yet another collection. I just get the ones that I like. I don't I'm not like out hunting rare ones or anything like that. I just, the ones, my favorite albums or my friends' albums, I just buy them. I have 4 Kallax cubes full, and that's the entirety of my record collection. So it's more just a little thing in the closet than a main thing.
So we kind of mentioned it earlier on in the show, but we have to thank friend of the pod, Ryan Ting from the Marvel Legends team and fellow pop punk and ska enthusiast for connecting us. So I think in lieu of our normal Q&A section, I think it's only fair that we hit you with a couple of questions from Ryan.
Sure.
So Ryan is going to lead our Q&A. Dave, do you want to roll with the first question there?
Yeah, sure. So number one is, what are your top 3 ska bands?
My top 3 ska bands. Real Big Fish. I'm going to do this part historically and part current. So Real Big Fish, number one. We Are the Union. And it's so hard. That is so hard. The Hippos.
Okay. You know what?
It's really hard to just say 3.
I think Ryan would expect all of us to answer this question, Dave.
I feel like he would.
So do you want to go next or should I go next with your top 3 ska bands? All right. So my number one is Less Than Jake. My number two, we're going to do Streetlight Manifesto.
Okay.
For number two. 3 is hard. I want to say Real Big Fish because that was kind of the Real Big Fish and Mighty Mighty Boss Stones were kind of the bands that got me initially got me into ska, but I gotta go with, I'm gonna do Real Big Fish. Yeah, I'm gonna do so yeah, Less Than Jake, Streetlight Manifesto, and Real Big Fish. Those are my 3 favorite.
Okay, so we're gonna dip into the same pool a little bit. I'm going Boss Stones 1. Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, they're kind of my entry point. Actually, it goes back to the Levi's commercial, not even Clueless. then I would definitely say Streetlight Manifesto and Less Than Jake. Streetlight, shout out to, I think Pete's still playing bass with them.
He is. Pete is still.
I went to high school with Pete.
You went to high school. Oh, cool. You went to high school with him, and he was my wife's neighbor growing up. So
okay,
how about that? We're
the
smallest of small worlds. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny you mentioned Clueless with Boss Tones. I always think of that weird movie with Billy Crystal and Robin Williams.
Father's Day,
where they both think they're the kids. The one kid, they both think they're his son.
That's the movie, right? Father's Day?
I think it's called Father's Day.
I think that's what it's called. I've never seen it, but...
Oh. He goes to there's a whole scene where they're in the pit at a Boss Tones concert.
Oh, wow.
And Billy Crystal is headbutting children.
I mean, 7 years difference. That makes sense for as far as the movies go.
And he's teaching Robin Williams how to headbutt the children in the pit in order to get, their son out of, a bad situation. But it's so funny to me because it's the complete opposite thing that would ever happen in a Mighty Mighty Boss Stones concert happening in that pit. But yeah, that's what I anytime I think of that band, I am immediately drawn to that very strange scene from that movie.
Now I have to watch it.
Oh, it's a bizarre movie. I haven't seen it in probably, it's got to be it's got to be 15 years at least since I've seen it. I don't even know if it's available streaming anywhere, but
I have an amazing recall for its existence, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And the kid is somebody famous too. I want to say it's Nick Papagiorgio from Vegas Vacation. I think.
Oh, Ethan Embry.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think he plays the kid. If it's not, it's like it's a kid that's an actor that looked a lot like him, and my brain is just like it's all of us are. Amazing radio. All of us right now are IMDb-ing the movie.
Yeah, I'm looking because I don't think it's called Father's Day.
It's not Ethan Embry. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in it.
Yes. Yes. Is it called Father's Day, Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, it is? Oh, yeah, there it is.
I can't find
it. There was another Father's Day that came up when I first looked.
It says the bands in it are Sugar Ray and the Muffs.
Oh me, now I'm all twisted. Maybe I'm misremembering. I feel like if for sure the song that's playing in the background during the headbutting scene is the impression
I
that
not
I get.
Seen this. Charlie Hoffheimer is the actor.
I'm gonna have to revisit this movie now and like rewire my brain. Okay, so tangent aside, weird 90s movie tangent aside, the other question that Ryan has is if you could pick one graphic novel each from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, what would they be?
Okay, so I'm taking this to mean series because there weren't really graphic novels in the 80s. And they're not much in the 90s. So these are going to be collections of what I would pick from those decades. So for the 80s, while it's not 100% 80s, started late 70s, I'd have to go with The Uncanny X-Men Omnibus Volume 1 that collects the first however many issues, starting with Giant Size X-Men number 1, which introduced the modern X-Men team, Storm, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Banshee, Sunfire, Zuckerberg, maybe forgetting someone, but that would be my pick for the 80s. It's like I said, it starts in the late 70s, but close enough. My 90s pick is going to be totally out of left field, but it's for nostalgia reasons, and it ties into something for Ryan, which is I'm going to pick X-Men Operation Zero Tolerance because that original trade paperback was one of the first trade paperbacks I ever got, and one of the first X-Men stories I read in full, which is not one of the most popular storylines of all time. It was later in the 90s when comics weren't as popular anymore. But because of when I read it and how early I read it, it's always had a very special place in my heart. And the three members of the X-Men that joined in that story that have a special place in my heart because of it, even though most people don't care that much about these characters, are Maggot, Marrow, and Dr. Cecilia Reyes. So I'm very was so happy when we got a Maggot Marvel Legends.
Yeah.
Now I just need Ryan to get on Marrow and Cecilia Reyes for me.
See, when I think of Zero Tolerance, I don't know why I might be wrong because my brain is clearly failing me this evening. But there's a cover of like Wolverine in like a yellow tactical vest.
Yes.
He's like leaning forward.
Yep.
I love that version of Wolverine. Like just
yeah,
like
I think that was drawn. Yeah, I think that was drawn by Lanil Francis Yu. Yeah. I think
super 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 cool cover. Jumps right, and I can remember like the like circle. Zero Tolerance, like logo is in like it's either in the upper left or upper right, but like awesome, awesome cover. I would love a Marvel Legends version of that Wolverine.
I was also stoked to get the Bastion with the Sentinel as well.
Yep, yep, yep. Okay, and then the last one.
Oh yeah, in the 2000s.
Yeah,
so Ultimate Spider-Man Omnibus Volume 1. Because Ultimate Spider-Man was my top favorite book for many, 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 many years. And it was one of the first books I started reading when I started reading comics. Issue number 4 is when I started buying it off the rack. And I just love that series. I mean, it's almost impossible for me to narrow it down. Like when you're taking the last 24 years, 23 years, like it's almost impossible for me to just pick one. But that was the first one that came to my mind. So that's why I'm sticking with that.
I still have my Ultimate Spider-Man number one in a board bag somewhere.
Nice.
Mine,
well, not somewhere.
Mine
it's
I bought
in my
while
bookshelf.
I was in college. Mine I bought while I was in college, so that isn't in the best shape. But
so I actually bought it twice, or it was okay. bought for me twice. The one that I read no longer exists. I found this one like squirreled away with stuff. Like I honestly, I don't think I had the foresight to like put it away. Definitely not at that time. I think I honestly and truly just forgot that I bought it and put it in a pile somewhere and was like, oh, I want to read this. And like went back and got it again at some point.
Yeah. I remember that was like the first book that had like that hype.
Yeah.
In a long time.
Yeah. Well, I got into finally being a comics, like hardcore weekly reader after the first X-Men movie. So also like that was the era and it had Ultimate Spider-Man had started just a little bit before that. So
yeah.
I never went back and got it. I mean, I've obviously read the whole series. I never went back and got issues 1 through 3 and I later sold my entire run. I did keep, Ultimate Fallout number 4, which is the first appearance of Miles Morales. So I do still have that.
Very cool.
Because I love the character, and so I decided to keep that one.
Well, before we let you go, we do have a tradition on this show where we have a final question that we ask all of our guests. Dave, would you like to fulfill your role as this show's James Lipton and ask our final question?
Why, yes, I would. So, Max, this is the final question that we ask all of our guests. What is your favorite and or strangest piece in your collection? It can be one of each, or it can be both.
Okay. Again, almost impossible. But the first thing that came to my mind, so that's what I'm going to stick with, is when I took over my business and I started to have a little bit more disposable income, I found something that I always wanted, never thought I would get. It was expensive, but it was a very good price for this. And more importantly, it was somewhere where I could drive to get it because it's so large that it's not that feasible to ship, which is the Millennium Falcon Extraordinaire, which is the ones that were hanging in Toys R Us's in 1999 and every store gave one away. So I do have one of those. It's not in perfect condition. It is complete, but I've had it for a few years already. And I keep saying I need to find someone to like 3D print some things to fix it. And I'd love to get it like fully tricked out and customized someday, but I do have it and I love having it. It's pretty darn close. I feel to 1/12 scale. Maybe yeah. like a tiny bit too small, but like you put a figure next to it, the cockpit, and it looks pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with that as my favorite toy in my collection. Strangest? I'm not sure. I guess that one's kind of strange because like a lot of people don't even know what it is. But I was able to like I just saw one pop up on Facebook, and it was in Fresno, which is like a 3 or 4 hour drive. So I contacted, it was at some like card shop. And I was like, hey, can I drive and will you give me a better price by paying cash? She was like, yep. So I took a whole day and I went out there and picked it up. And nice. Yeah.
So I would say that qualifies as both.
Yeah, that definitely qualifies as both. I mean, I've been collecting Star Wars figures. Like I still collect the 3 3/4 inch. I never really got into Black Series. I'm still like, that's my primary collection. That and my Marvel Legends are really like the two things that I have more than anything else of. And I've been collecting since that Power of the Force 2 line, like still have my original ones from
you know,
when those were given to me. And I am today years old. I've never heard of this Millennium Falcon and I'm trying to wrap my head around it and trying to not go on eBay right now and start looking for it.
I vaguely remember one hanging up in the store.
Yeah, they were in, it was in pretty much every Toys R Us in 1999. And then they gave it, it was a raffle to give them away when the promotion was over.
That's fascinating. I'm looking it up right now. This is fascinating. I have to. We have a friend, very good friend of the pod. Shouts to Craig, who used to work at our local Toys R Us. So I am definitely going to be bugging him about this when we get off with you, because I need to know more. This thing looks incredible.
And just a side note to what you're saying too, it's just a funny like collecting thing that I'm sure like you guys can relate to, is I frequently have, well, somewhat frequently have like a crisis of conscience and think like, did I make a mistake by getting into Black Series and not sticking with 3 3/4 inch? Because there's just part of me that feels like Star Wars is 3 3/4 inch.
Yeah,
it is.
But I had stopped in 2010, and yeah, I honestly think about it more than I should, about if I should just dump all the Black Series and like try to go back and like fill in the 3 3/4 inch. And I'm like, am I making a mistake? Do I continue to make this mistake? I don't know. I love the Black Series too, though. I love the Black Series.
Well, it was like what Eric was telling me, and it's kind of adjacent to like, well, should I be doing this? Was when I started my Oops All Ghost Riders Marvel Legends collection. And it's like, there's only 7, like,
yeah,
so far. No, I mean, I tell this to everybody.
I was almost in on the HasLab, but yeah.
I was in on the HasLab. I'm very disappointed in that.
Yeah, I wanted Robbie in the car.
Yeah, and the Rancor didn't get funded either. I wanted that. I was also bummed because I've toned it back, but I'm a pretty crazy, like I was a pretty crazy army builder. So like I have 7 of the Sentinels, although 2 I've never opened. So I've thought maybe I'll just sell those because 5 is still a lot.
It is.
And
you make 1 master mold and then
exactly
you make the two flank.
That's why it has to be an odd number, because you need the 1 master mold. Exactly. But I already had like a bunch of the previous one they'd released, the Days of Future Past one and whatever, like the smaller one. And my Marvel Legends completionism is based on character, not on every figure. So, and I used to get like every costume of characters, but I've cut back on that a lot. And I don't do any MCU except for Spider-Man stuff. But I'm a completionist as far as like characters. So any like unique version that I consider to be a unique, like different version of that character, I get. So even with the Galactus, because they put that Dr. Doom Galactus head in, and that is a completely unique character from a different universe, I did have to buy 2 Galactuses so I could have both of those. So in that vein, I was pretty bummed that Giant Man didn't get to the next tier, because I would have 100% gotten 3 so I could have regular Zombie and Skrull. But yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Also, so the Legends team doesn't get mad, it's 9 Ghost Riders.
No, you looked it up.
No, I was counting in my head.
So the one thing I always say to people who are on the fence about the Vintage Collection or Black Series, or like they're trying to like they're having that kind of like internal dialogue, I mean, the way that I see it is there are just things that I can get with the Vintage Collection and in the 3 3/4 inch scale. And I mean, some of those older, like, you know, older Hasbro figures, even with the limited articulation, still hold up really well. Like, even if
they're
background characters or, you know, whatever.
I think one of my favorite, well, it was always my favorite in the old days, was a pretty early figure. I think it was, it was Green Card POTF2, which was the Return of the Jedi Vader with the removable top helmet and the removable hand. That figure was like perfect. And that came out in like 1997.
Yeah, rules. The Yak face that I'm staring at, I have my long story short, like there are things you can do with Vintage Collection that you can't do with Black Series. Like,
yes.
You know, I'm looking at Jabba's throne room set up on my display right now with all like completely filled in with all of the characters and everything, and like it, like they can never do a set like that. They're never gonna make a Millennium Falcon that's even close to being on scale with 1 3/4.
Well, I'll definitely, like I said, I still have all my 3 3/4 inch from back in the day. So I will, one thing I decided, like I will, well, I did sell some stuff, but vehicles for sure keep, like I won't get rid of my BMF, you know, and I did get the Razor Crest, and I am getting the Ghost, and I pre-ordered the Sabine and whatever the ones that they just put up, so I could have the whole Ghost crew in that scale in in the Ghost. But you know, to your point on the Jabba's Palace, though, I did get a third party throne from eBay, so I do have my own little black series Jabba's setup as well.
Nice. Yeah, shouts to Landspeeder Luke. Makes some really, really cool stuff for 112 for Black Series.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, listen, Max, this has been an absolute blast.
This is a lot of fun.
Before we say goodbye, please let our audience know, where can they find out all the news about Half Past Two? Where can they follow you? Where can they pre-order their vinyl edition of your new album?
Yeah, so as far as the band goes, we are at Half Past Two Ska everywhere. So Half Past Two SKA. The new album is available at through Bad Time Records, which I'm double checking right now. I think it's just badtimerecords.com. Yep, yes, it is. So if you go to badtimerecords.com, our album is the thing that pops up right now. Pre-order campaign is going. The first variant, the Cosmic Swirl, which is absolutely gorgeous, and I can't wait to see it in person. That is half sold out. So get on that. And then as far as work goes, cheapgraphicnovels.com is my website, at cheapgn on Instagram. And yeah, that's my life is toys, comics, and music. That's pretty much it all the time.
Awesome.
And I am at King Otter. I'm at King Otter Pop on Instagram if anyone wants to follow me for some reason.
Well, we'll make sure to put all of the links to all of those things in the show notes, so that way you guys can, you know, tap and or click to follow and support Half Past Two. And hey, maybe when you're out here in later in April, maybe we'll try to get out to Brooklyn to see you guys play.
Yeah, let me know.
So with that, Dave, why don't you send us home?
Everybody, put on your favorite record and dance. Just get in a little circle and dance.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.